Soul. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent Firebird Book Award winner to share with you. He is Rico, known as R.G. DeRuan. He is the third quarter's International Firebird Book Award winning author in the children's book category for his nonfiction picture book biography titled Mother to Elephants. He is a children's book author and all-round globetrotter. He grew up in Carmel, California, and has been working these past 27 years as an elementary teacher in international schools throughout the world. Born in Korea to an American father and a German mother, he considers himself to be a true third culture kid. Not only later in life, but also as a youngster, his family moved a lot, and his parents always stressed the value of getting to know other cultures, which he and his wife have tried to pass on to their two daughters. He is a graduate of the Institute of Children's Literature in Connecticut and enjoys teaching creative writing skills to his students. I am looking forward to finding out more about this jet-setting person. Welcome to the network, RG.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat.
Oh, my gosh, such a pleasure. We are talking to you today from Paris, France, and congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Oh, thank you so much.
It was my pleasure to share that with you. All righty. Well, before we get into your books, maybe just tell us a little bit more about you, your globetrotting life, which I am sure inspires you to write your books.
Oh, thank you. Well, it all started quite a few years back. Actually, when we got married in Kenya, I came across a nice young American lady and, you know, I was contemplating, what do I do? I was in business before, but she said that you've also have done camps with children and enjoy working with kids so much. Have you ever considered becoming a teacher and getting licensed? And I said, no, I hadn't. And she told me all about the international school she works for. And so my wife and I decided that might be a good fit. And I had to go back to the U.S. We went to New York and got licensed there. And that's from there, my first posting became an international school in Beijing after a great time teaching in New York City.
Wow. So that was the beginning of the journey. And you've been all over, haven't you?
Yes. Let's see. I'm trying to remember. But China was the first one. Mm-hmm. And we've also been to Vietnam, Austria, back to the U.S. in D.C., Germany. And our last posting was now in Muscat, Oman. Mm-hmm. And now we're in Paris. And loving it here.
I love that. What a life to get to not only help students and children and help them grow that way, but also to just expand your own horizons by seeing the world. And as you said earlier in your bio, just to appreciate and learn about other cultures.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It's I think, one of the greatest things. I think several authors have talked about that. And they say it's one of the nicest things you could ever do, actually, for your children too, is give them a gift of travel. Mm-hmm. and getting to know other people and the culture. And I'm a big foodie. My wife sometimes says I have to cut back on that, but I love the food, so I have to really watch out over here in Paris because it's everywhere you go.
Oh, absolutely! It's outstanding food. Yeah, you need to be on your best behavior there.
Yeah.
All righty. So from that authorship arrived, and your first book is titled Books for Benjamin, a children's book. Why write? Why children's books?
One of my favorites was always, I've always loved books. And as a kid, I was really into mysteries, which I'll soon be coming up with a chapter book mystery series for kids called Globetrotter Mysteries. And it started, one of the favorite things I love to do is go to cafes, but one of my favorites was Barnes & Noble's bookstores. In fact, Benjamin was written in a Barnes & Noble, and long time ago in New York City. And I just love, when I was a student also, I had to pick a topic, a thesis topic, when I was doing my master's. And I also chose to analyze gender issues, how women are being treated in children's picture books. So I could combine the love of books with something I like to do and bring that into my thesis project. And so writing started back then. Benjamin was my first idea, and it came about by a nice visit to the Library of Congress, which features prominently in the book towards the end, and has to do with the copyright symbol and things like that, and introducing kids to look for that in their own book.
That's interesting that you were focused on women and how they are portrayed in books, because as I think back as a young child, you know, women were always the mothers, the nurturers. And what have you found in children's books and how they have evolved?
Well, this is quite a few years ago, but the U.S. was starting to take a lead on kind of rectifying that situation. Mm-hmm. I tried to put another spin on it for my thesis. What became very popular was books like, I think it was called Mirette on the High Wire. So before, you had all the more, like, I would say, adventurous, dangerous kind of style books. Mm-hmm. Were always featuring the boys.
Right.
And so then the movement came to bring the girls in there and start that. And that was already a step in the right direction. I took another argument, too, on top of that, because I had to come up with something that was not published yet. And I said, I argued that that's a positive. That's definitely a positive. But you can also have a woman who decides to be the mother, and by choice, she is the homemaker. And as long as you portray that person as having quite a bit of power within the family structure, mm-hmm. that this is also a very positive.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's all about choices and how people are being portrayed. Mm-hmm. And I think we've come a long way, a lot more improvement on that one, in the U.S., at least.
For sure. Yeah, to portray at least the autonomy of the choice.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then your next book, Mother to Elephants, kind of continues on that, because it is about, it portrays the life of Daphne Sheldrick and her dedication into rescuing baby orphan elephants. And that's the one that won our recent Firebird Book Award that really caught our eye. So maybe give us a peek into that and how that came about.
Well, my wife and I got married in Kenya, and one of the biggest dreams I've always had was to go on an African safari. And the dream all came together, but not only marrying, but also being able to go on those safaris. And my wife and I just loved taking the time, taking our Jeep and driving out on our own and going out, especially to watch the elephants at play at the waterholes. And what we discovered was that they seemed so much like humans. I mean, I saw the little ones were playing and enjoyed pushing each other down the muddy riverbanks. And it looked so much like, I said to my wife, that, oh my God, that's the game I used to play. We called it King of the Hill. And they would push each other down. And then it seemed like you could tell the joy of laughter was in, you know, that they were portraying as well. And so we would spend hours with our Jeep. And when others were going back to the lodges getting their lunch, we had packed lunch with us and took our time to just observe. We were very fortunate that we got to live in the country for almost 4 years. And so we could go on a lot of safaris and observe the elephants. Mm. And at that time, I think over time I found out about a lady, you mentioned her, Daphne Sheldrick was her name. She unfortunately passed away not too long ago. But she was in charge of rescuing orphaned elephants. And her whole goal in life was not to keep them as so-called pets. It's a 10-year process, very long. But she rehabilitates them, gives them the will to live again, and then her whole mission in life is to reintroduce them into the wild. And elephants are really accepting animals. So she tells stories that they always seem to sense her former orphans always show up, even though it's thousands of kilometers away, when she brings the new ones to be reintroduced into the wild herd. Mm-hmm. So it's like a welcoming committee that show up and then take them. The nice part about the story is they take them together back into the wild when the new ones are ready. Daphne's joined by quite a few Africans, Kenyans, who are so dedicated. She calls them her unsung heroes. They're dedicated to spending those 10 years with these elephants.
Wow. Was there a lot of research involved, I would imagine, in order to write this book?
Oh, very much, mm-hmm. Yes. Because it still is a picture book, but because it's based on, it's a nonfiction narrative, I had to do a lot of research. I wanted to be true to the whole story. So I read Daphne's biography, a lot of her interviews, videos. There's been a film, 3D IMAX film made about her. And Birute Galdikas, who's the lady who does the orangutans.
Mm-hmm.
Those two are featured, another amazing lady. I have two daughters, by the way. That's why I also am very much in favor of promoting women's causes and things.
Right.
And so it was nice to be able to portray Daphne, who starts out, I learned as a young girl, she was put in charge of orphan animals by her parents. And she learned early on how to care for them. But one of the things that I really wanted to bring into the story was Daphne's father always said to her that, you know, if now I'm putting you in charge of a wild animal, but if you truly love this animal, one day you must set it free.
Mm-hmm.
And that always stuck with Daphne. That was always her purpose in life, is get them back to health. And then, because she's famous for the elephants, that's why I chose the name Mother to Elephants. She was often called that. And, but she's also, a lot of people don't know it, but she's also rehabilitated countless rhinos, giraffe, and other animals as well.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine once you have that skill and just that... just that personality, I guess, mm-hmm. that obviously it would transfer easily from animal to animal.
The nice part is the legacy still continues. I mentioned that Daphne passed away about 5 years back. But Angela, her daughter, one of her daughters, and her grandchildren have taken it over.
Oh.
So it still continues to this day. And one can visit, actually, two of my former children in my class when I was teaching in Berlin, sent me a photo. They didn't even know that they were both going there. I've talked it up so much, but their parents sent me a photo. They ended up on the same day at Daphne's orphanage, which was really, really great to receive that photo.
Oh, absolutely. Just the impact. Think of that. I love this.
Mm-hmm.
How did you determine the right age range for your book and for the target audience? Because you could have gone so deep into the research that it would have transcended a children's book and became something else. How did you decide where to place this?
That was the trickier part, because it is such an... And also, there is one scene in it. I don't know if I'm allowed to do a spoiler alert, but the there is a scene in it that involves loss. And I struggled when I even presented this to schools, but luckily other teachers assured me. I've even worked as low as the kindergarten mm-hmm. with that. Actually, the pre-K students as well, but it's more suitable for like second grade on up. And the reason is there is that one scene of loss and more of the understanding. But I was amazed about the kindergartners. And one of them told me, said, no, that's how it is. We have pets. And it's, you know, really, you know, something else when you lose a pet. But it's life and, you know, you have to go on. But so that made me feel a lot better. And I asked the illustrator, could she illustrate the scene? And I think the original words I had, and they were stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I realized that, no, I need to tone that back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if she could, for the little ones, because sometimes the little one might pick it up, and it looks as if the elephant is sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the illustrator can do a really good job with that and help with... But from the feedback I've gotten from children all over, they've told me that, no, they love the book, they love the elephants, and it is sad that there is a loss in one scene. But this is how, because it's a biography,
yes.
I didn't want to sugarcoat that scene And I wanted it to be, Daphne uses this particular scene and learns from it. In fact, this is how she has her whole team now developed. It used to be Daphne used to sleep alone with the elephant and her daughter. And of course, that was years of her life and difficult alone. But elephants are so close that this particular elephant bonded with her so much that when Daphne left to go off to her daughter's wedding, the elephant refused, even though she had a caretaker who she knew, she just refused to feed anymore. And so that's the sad part is, but Daphne learned then through that, that she needed at least four caretakers per elephant. Mm-hmm. And that has been the secret formula that's worked so well now, is because the elephants do bond. Wow. I mentioned the elephants who come and they take the new ones out to the wild. The nice part about the whole story is that this is years ago, and these former orphans have now had children of their own, wild babies, and they always come back to Daphne's orphanage to show off their babies, and they always go to those four caretakers who took care of them so long ago.
Oh my gosh, you're just giving me chills.
Yeah, it's an interesting. Daphne always felt that they have a way of sensing your heart, how you feel about them. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, we can't scientifically prove that one, but so many stories from others you hear all the time that they just sense a lot, mm-hmm. a lot more than we know.
Yes. And I really think this transcends across all animals. I'm recording an audiobook for someone about their horses, and it's all what you're saying here sounds extremely similar. And you know, I have 13 cats, and I know the communication level that that goes on here was something way beyond most people might imagine. So I'm thinking about your worry of putting loss in there, and maybe some of these young children hadn't experienced a loss of a pet, but maybe when they do, then they refer back to they might think back to this book, Mother to Elephants, and think, well, okay, well, this is okay, this happened. And you have no idea of the impact that your words and the book is going to make on children and adults, you know?
Yes.
Yep, yep.
And what you mentioned is so true about all the different animals. Early on in my career in New York, I was fortunate to meet and work a little bit with someone who I've always looked up to as a big mentor and hero, and Jane Goodall.
Yes.
And her books are all about, it's not just the chimpanzees who we share the DNA with, but we're learning so much about all these animals and how they have their emotions. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, as humans, we need to treat them equally, is that, you know, that they're not just a number somewhere.
Absolutely.
And I read about your work with like rescued cats as well. Mm-hmm. So that's actually what drew me to you as well.
I studied Reiki quite in depth, specializing in cats. And just because I felt like I had such a energetic connection to them, and just the, kind of the healing ability, and some of the things that have transpired have just been truly astounding. I'm not going to talk about it today, but you look into an animal's eyes and there is just so much communication.
We had two cats sadly that passed away, but we were always wondering, like, the cats would always know when we were about to travel.
Yes.
And Rusty didn't want to get back in his, you know, we were taking him along, mm-hmm. and he didn't want to get into his, what do you call it, a little cage area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it was food, and he normally would not pass up any food, so that didn't work either, trying to put out some food earlier.
Yep.
They just somehow sensed, and so we said, oh, well, we can't put it out the day before, let's just see. But somehow they knew, and the next morning we always had to search. Where did they go? And I couldn't blame them. They didn't always like sometimes the travel.
Oh, I understand that. Yes, they pick up on our energy very much. Oh, yeah. So. Yep. Well, now you mentioned illustrations. Talk a bit about the collaboration process with your illustrator and how it worked to complement the text.
Well, this was actually the first book. Benjamin ended up being the first one that I published because it was there. I had a very nice illustrator for this one as well. Unfortunately, the day we signed the paperwork was that she's Ukrainian. The whole war conflict started. Mm-hmm. So she called me up and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I know would understand if you want to pull out of this." I said, "No, I'm there. I'll support you." But we did realize the project will take longer. She's also an illustrator. I'd love to illustrate my books. I paint as well, but I admire those who can do a book and turn a scene a certain way. Mm-hmm. I just don't feel I could do that just yet. And the great part is doing it yourself. You could work and collaborate with the illustrator. So I did a lot of sketches that I could show her the scenes, and then she picked up on that. Some she incorporated what I had, others she had her own vision. And what was interesting and the challenge, and but she was like you, an animal lover, so I knew right away that this is the one, would be a good fit, you could tell. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to really be dedicated to how the story should be. She looked at a lot of photographs from Daphne and her team, but not just the people, but the foliage as well, like flora and fauna. So one time I had, she had drawn a bird, and I said, "Oh my God, that's the weaver birds that we had in Kenya just outside her house." And she said, "Oh, can you show me again what that looks like?" And she had done that very, very well. And there's a tree in Africa also called the sausage tree. You also have the upside down tree, the banyan trees, and the other. She would draw all of those and make it, because what you wanted, you want an authentic book.
Yes.
So we even paid attention to the details of the leaves and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And but she pursued through it. Luckily, she's been staying safe so far. I just don't know how she was able to come up with mm-hmm. that, during this kind of situation, because her hometown area was bombed.
Wow.
And it's a teacher place, second largest city in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to escape. They don't have children, but she's married, but they did have a cat. So that was difficult as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the work she produced was really, really nice. And so what she does is, the way it starts is she uses the same process I do. Benjamin was done by a digital illustrator, which I'd love to be able to do. It's much quicker. But the way this illustrator worked is she, Katerina, draws them first, does the sketches, then does the watercolor painting, then scans them, and then does retouching digitally.
Wow.
But each painting would take at least 2 weeks then.
Oh.
So it's a lengthier process to have that. And then, of course, there's in-between time as well, mm-hmm. where she's doing other things. The nice part about it is that I think she's done a wonderful job in capturing, the emotion of the elephants and the people and the whole scenery involved in Africa. And she said she had a really great time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, but with this type of book, unlike fiction, we can use more of the imagination, and you're freer to do it. And this one, we have to be try to be as realistic as possible. But a fun project to work on. I really enjoyed it. But it took much longer to put that together, because it's everything has to be checked and fact-checked and make sure it's okay.
But well worth it, my friend. Very, very much
well worth it.
Absolutely. You also share some little-known elephant facts, and I was interested that elephants can be right-tusked or left-tusked. That, who would have thought?
That's correct, yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. That was one that I learned as well through the research, that they have, just like we're right-handed and left-handed,
mm-hmm.
they, I always think of the kids in sports, boys and girls going out for baseball, Little League, and which hand do they favor?
Yes.
It's the same with elephants. They'll favor one tusk over the other.
Interesting.
And so that's how they scientists have found out about that one. Another little known one, which I particularly enjoyed, I had heard things about that, but I didn't know how they tested for it. But scientists have also done studies on, they've known for a long time that elephants, elephants hear with their ears. And they found over short distances, this is true. But they've now discovered that they can also hear over much longer distances through their feet. So they hear over long distances. Scientists have discovered, they did an experiment where at a waterhole, they set up different warning signs, some much further away. If it's a short danger sign that alert, and it's a sign they chose that gets elephants to almost always move away. And it's, I forgot what type it is used, but it's a signal that danger is coming. Mm. And as soon as they hear that, they will scatter from the waterfall, if it's a short distance. But they found out that if they place this a lot farther away, the elephants will linger a while still at the waterhole and then leave, knowing that it's they still have time. So they started doing, so they found the further away they were, the longer they stayed, but they would eventually also move on. And so they did a lot of tests over time with that. So they're still finding out, there's a lot left to find out about these wonderful creatures.
Absolutely. I wonder if that's a vibrational thing.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's like a, it's almost like we, you know, we have like an earthquake going on, the rumbling.
Yes.
And the elephants do their rumble noises, but they seem to pick up noises also through their feet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's things that we don't perceive, but they pick up on.
Fascinating. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Your book is outstanding.
So good.
So I was going to ask what's next, but you said you're working on Globetrotters Mysteries.
Yes, there's a sequel to Benjamin, the first book that I have, Books for Benjamin.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think there would be, but there, it's also a nod against to our great librarians who did everything they could during the COVID time to get books in the hands of little kids. And so it's kind of a bit based on that story. But I have written quite a bit on a mystery series that is about two American twins, and they travel the world, kind of like I do, and they're very open, though. So everywhere they've gone with their parents, they love solving mysteries, but they solve the mysteries together. And I thought they learn from the culture that they, you know, that they're with, and so that was kind of the gist of Globetrotter Mysteries, and I hope to have that out, at least the first one or two out soon.
Oh, good. We will look forward to that.
Thanks.
All right. Anything we missed that you wanted to highlight today?
Oh, sometimes I talk about what readers to come away with. And basically, the answer I have to that is that, like Daphne, who has her love and, you know, determination, she stuck to it, whatever her goal was. I see myself as staying with something because you never know. I got lucky later in life and now have become an author. You know, I encourage kids to follow their passion and their dreams. This is something that Jane Goodall always does when she signs her books. She always signs, follow your dreams. I find that's an important thing for kids to pursue what they enjoy. And somehow, you know, you might be able to make it happen and the magic happens.
Oh.
And like I said, for me, it was a lot later in life that this happened, but it was a dream of mine. And luckily, my wife is very supportive, and so now I can have this happen as well.
Oh, thank you. That is an excellent message to end on. Absolutely. It's also wonderful that you found another like-minded person to share your life with. It's just so beautiful to...
Yeah, she loves nature and animals a lot.
Yeah, that's so good. All right. How about giving us some contact information where folks can find out more and get copies of your books?
Oh, sure. Probably for the vast majority of the public out there, it's available in most stores, Amazon stores, Barnes & Nobles, which I love. It's also online in several private bookstores. So but through online throughout the world in quite a few of those. So that's where it's available. With schools and libraries, they usually purchase through Ingram Spark, which is the print-on-demand company, that because they offer bigger discount for them. Okay. So that's where it's found. But predominantly Amazon and Barnes & Noble in the U.S.
Okay. And your website?
It's at rgderoen.com. Right. So rgderoen.com okay. is my website. And there are also some freebies for kids there as well. So that would be good if they could take a look.
All righty. That's right. You also have teacher's guides, right?
I do, mm-hmm. yes. And they're for teachers. I have some teacher's guides. The one for Mother to Elephants is coming out shortly.
Right.
I believe right now Books for Benjamin is on, up there.
All right. All righty. Well, we've talked about Books for Benjamin, Mother to Elephants, R.G. DeRoen. And the website is rgderoen.com. Thank you so much for today. I was just looking forward to finding out more about you because I knew you led such a wonderful, exciting lifestyle. And plus, this book was just so captivating. Thank you for sharing it with us. And we look forward to more of your upcoming works.
Oh, thank you so much, Pat.